Hi, everybody, and good evening here from north of the Arctic Circle again. We're back here at the Little Bear Meditation Center. And when we look almost straight up, not quite, more like maybe 70 degrees, we do see Polaris, which is in the tail of the Little Bear, and it's that great star of direction. That and the two pointers, you know. Polaris stands for many things, but for guidance is the main thing. And if we look at the three fire signs, we have Dubé, which is the pointer closest to Polaris, representing Leo, and often the personality, and then Merak, that part of the Great Bear, which represents Aries, and more the soul quality, and then perhaps we can say, since we're talking about direction, that Polaris is closely related to Sagittarius, although tropically it's going into the sign Gemini at this time. So that's the lineup, and we're right under this star of guidance. I've often thought, you know, I know this is not on the glamour subject exactly, but I've often thought that the Little Bear is a higher octave of Sirius. And although we often hear of the triangle, which goes Great Bear, Pleiades, Sirius, I think that Sirius is sometimes a blind for the much more powerful energy of the entire constellation and the lord of that constellation of the Little Bear, which includes Polaris. So there's the father, that's the Great Bear, the cosmic Manu, the son, which is the Christ principle of our local one about whom naught may be said. And that is the Little Bear, and then certain aspects of the Pleiades stand for the mother aspect. Really, the Pleiades is the great power in our whole local system. So we have a little meditation center up here, and we'll be, when the sun does not set, and sometimes when it does not rise, we'll be holding little meditation gatherings here, and some people may wish to come in person and experience the extremes that exist whenever you're north of the Arctic Circle, or let's just say south of the Antarctic Circle. Now, let's just have a little bit of alignment. We have I don't know, about 30 of us here tonight, and I'm very happy to see you from all over the, you know, the various continents that in which our work is done. You know, largely Europe, Australia, New Zealand, and then the Americas, North and South America. And we do have students, of course, in Vietnam and in Asia and India and places like that, but for the most part, attending these webinars, it's these three continents that we are talking about, maybe four, North and South America, Europe, and Australia, New Zealand. So let's just have a little alignment among us. Our work is on the dissipation of glamour, and there's a lot of it current, you know, the very eventful election that's coming up in the United States for the so-called leader of the free world. I guess at least that's the way the president of the United States is sometimes seen and understood. So there's a lot of glamour swirling around that whole process, and we see the opposition between the extremely personal and the larger global picture. And obviously, we're entering into the age of Aquarius. Aquarius represents the right kind of globalism without extinguishing the unique originality under Leo of each one of the nations with their soul and personality contribution. Obviously, one can take the Aquarian energy too far, And we would have what's called in the South the tall poppy syndrome. You know, if the flower is too high, you just lop it off and make it equal with everything else. That's not the kind of thing we're looking for. We're looking for unity in variety, variety in unity. We're looking for a multiple representation of all the different soul and personality qualities among the nations, and yet an Aquarian type of unity, and even eventually universality, which unites them all. So that's quite a tall order, and we've been working on the glamour of hatred and separativeness. I can just speak. You know, I'm not exactly an expatriate. I'm on the news services all the time, and even though I'm here in Finland, I'm very much a citizen of the United States, and returning home to vote in person, not an absentee ballot. And I can say that this has been an extremely divisive campaign, and the values upon which decision is being made will be monumental in their effects. Soul values and personality values are at stake. That doesn't mean that any one candidate represents entirely the soul and another entirely the personality, but we do have a clear division, and the soul values, which are the larger Aquarian values, must somehow prevail, and I suspect they will, though the next 9 years for the entire globe will not be easy in any respect. You know how it is before the coming of a great energy, and that, you know, the plans for the reappearance of the Christ are being definitely laid down, says the Tibetan, in all probability in 2025. And there's always a huge house cleaning before anything of that nature takes place, just the way there was a tremendous house cleaning of the World War I before DK gave his the teaching for which he was directly responsible and for which he eventually took a credit, or at least he didn't exactly allow his name to get out there, but it did go there. And once everybody knew, he definitely stepped forward and said, yes, this is the second ray dispensation of the teaching. And another dispensation is coming, and we have to prepare for it, and there will be a tremendous house cleaning. The deglamorization work is part of that house cleaning, and it operates on our own individual and group levels, and it operates globally. So we are participating in that very intensively, and those who work internally on these issues, which condition the way such important world events as the election will go, are doing a big job. And this task, simply because it's subjective, doesn't mean it's weak. It can be extremely powerful. So that's our task, and many will be the decisions in humanity around which the glamour swirls, and if it can be dissipated, then there will be a needed clarification for all, and we'll be heading in the right direction, not without pain, not without difficulty, but at least the right direction. So let us think of each other in the different continents and countries in which we may personally be located. But from a soul perspective, there is a greater principle of unity and non-locality, and we can all be what you call here, as it were. It doesn't mean where any one of us is particularly, or maybe it's where every one of us is particularly. We all are here. And we all are in each other's presence as beings more authentically focused on the higher mental plane, could we but enter into our truer identity, more authentically focused there than in the usual time-space world of the personality vehicles. And we're here to work together. We're here to render ourselves receptive to the hierarchy, which in many ways is the soul of humanity, or at least that group of beings who are far more responsive to the world of soul and triad than present humanity can be. We are receptive to the soul together, and we're seeking the kind of soul infusion into our mind which will help us clarify. That's the big word, the clarification of consciousness of the trained observers, to help clarify the psychic, mental, subjective situation in humanity's consciousness. So using the creative imagination and linking up the various forms of light, which we must do, we will work at this task. And we will have the faith that our work can be effective. In another 5 years, it will be more effective, and so on, the more we work together to sustain our purpose. So we'll sound the Om with our purpose in mind, to help clarify humanity's consciousness and not just know about its glamours, but actually do something along the scientific line, improving in our intensity and quality and ability and skill as we go, do something to really dissipate the veils upon reality and our perception of reality. Okay, just a little drink of water here and try to keep the voice going. When we stopped last time, it was program 19, this is now program 20, of our our doggy series, you know, Dissipation of Glamour, got a lot of sixth ray in it, as it should. We were talking about the light in the head, a blend of a number of methods, a technique which can be used by the individual who knows something, not everything, but something of the light of the mind, the light in the head, that's more phenomenal light, and of the light of the soul. And we're bringing together, that's our purpose, that's our searchlight, bringing together the soul light and the personality light, and it's focused in the mental body, producing an effect in the brain. You might say the irradiation of the brain and the activation of certain potencies. I guess it's not lost on us that this kind of light that we're projecting from the Ajna Center is very much like the horn of the unicorn and, you know, is kind of that revelatory weapon, you might almost say, which the initiate possesses. And which we, when we are full initiates, will possess in greater measure. Now I'd say, you know, most of us are either working on or have achieved the first degree, working on or have achieved the second degree, you know. That's the probability, and that was the case with those students who worked with Master DK. Very few, maybe Alice Bailey, maybe Roberto Sergioli, I don't know, maybe Foster Bailey, I'm not sure, I don't think so, but at least a couple, three, had achieved the third degree, but the great majority were somewhere between the first and second degree, so they were initiates of the threshold, and they were developing these different capacities which would come to fuller fruition when they became the full initiate. And then, of course, the power to really dissipate glamour will take a great leap forward in power. Now, we were talking about focusing this type of light, and it goes through several stages, because we need to focus this light if we're going to be effective, not just in recognizing a glamour, but in doing something about it in a scientific way. So DK has told us that the first light, which is pretty much the light of mentality plus the light of matter, which we might call vitality, it produces a pinpoint of light, but it has no dissipating power. It has some revelatory power. It's a little pinpoint of light, and we can begin to see, well, what shall I say, the mess we have made over, and which humanity has made over many, many centuries and millennia, and how that illusory fabrication of phantasmagoria that we call the astral plane, how it holds us away from a true appreciation of reality. So then that pinpoint is the first step, and it's the light of the mind and the light of matter together. But now we reach a second stage and a third, and we'll talk about it just a little bit. Number two, the second stage of the focusing process is produced through the effort to meditate. This is not just mental focusing upon some objective, although that type of focusing is an ingredient in meditation. But we are all here united by our efforts to meditate and to grow in the process of meditation. Alice Bailey, said it was the most important thing we could do, and that even our studies were secondary to it. You know, we might study so much that, as she says, we never truly learn to meditate. Well, we don't want that to be descriptive of us. In the previous stage, stage one, which we just briefly discussed again, the blending of the two material lights was entirely a form process, and the aspirant is actuated entirely by his personality forces and expediency. Now, that's interesting. The personality represents the third aspect of divinity, the soul, the second, the monad, the first, of course. And the word expediency is so often associated with the third ray and the third aspect of divinity. So, you know, what's the easiest way, expending the least energy, to get what you want as a personality? And when you put these two material lights together, you can achieve those kinds of objectives. An illustration of this and of its effectiveness can be seen in the man who, from purely selfish motives and through an intense concentration, focuses his mind and brings about the gratification of his desires and the achievement of his goals. So desire is ruling here. It's coming from the astral nature. It's not coming from the soul. We're talking about a very effective individual in the world of form. Not necessarily morally good, and perhaps morally bad. Let's see, what have we got here? Okay. He kills out all emotional reactions that, of course, might not be good, because, you know, such things as sensitivity and compassion and empathy, all that, you know, those things might just go. He kills out all emotional reactions and goes a long way towards dissipating glamour. Interesting, though, that even one who will veer off on the left-hand path can purify himself sufficiently, even emotionally, to take the second initiation. So just because we've achieved the second initiation, the test to determine whether we can follow the Syrian line of initiation and go towards the third degree, does not occur until midway between the second and third initiation, when we really achieve, for the first time, not just mental focus, but mental polarization, which involves holding the mind steady in the light. So even the one who's going to veer off towards the left, towards the past, towards the moon, towards the third aspect of divinity, even such a one can and must go a long way towards dissipating glamour. And, you know, they have very good minds, these people, and by being factual and realistic, many glamours which would inhibit them from achieving, whether it's good or bad, but from achieving, are dissipated. He develops the ability to draw on the light of matter itself, physical matter and mental substance. If I might say how it works, substance substands matter. It's all relative, you know. If you call one level of the cosmic physical plane by the term matter, there's always something that is substantial to it, standing underneath it, and somehow acting in a causative way relative to it. But matter is usually considered that which came from the previous solar system, and the subtler planes are considered to be substance. Except if you're talking cosmically, then the entire 18 lower subplanes, or even the entire 21 lower subplanes, are matter, and only the cosmic ethers are substantial. So he kills out emotional reaction. He's factual, he's realistic. He draws on the light of matter itself, physical matter and mental substance, and thus he generates a false light from which soul is rigorously excluded. Well, that doesn't sound too good, does it? It sounds like it's got the makings of someone who is the strictly mental magician. Those people do to emerge in the Aquarian Age, and who will have to be countered by the white magicians. So anyway, and thus generates a false light from which soul light is rigorously excluded. Now, there are a few black magicians, we are told, who do work on the causal levels and are very powerful, but the majority are confining themselves to the 18 lower subplanes, to the realm of the moon. It is this power which eventually produces a black magician. You know, first the left-hand path, and eventually, if you persist long enough, then you become the black magician, and you sever your connection with the physical plane, and you hang out on the astral plane in a certain location called Marakara, I guess they call it that. It is this power which eventually produces the black magician. He has developed the capacity to draw upon the light energy of matter, and matter is light. We've seen that with the E equals MC squared formula. Nobody seems to know how Einstein really came up with that, you know, but it was his creative imagination responding to Budi, which helped him with that. He has developed the capacity to draw upon the light energy of matter itself and to focus it so powerfully and effectively that it becomes a great destructive force. Well, you know, atomic energy, laser weaponry, we can see what happens when you harness the power of the atom of the third aspect, and this you do without regard for the soul or for the energy of love. It is this which has given Hitler and the six evil men associated with him, that's a direct statement of evil, their power to destroy upon the material plane. They had a straight shot to Shambhala according to its third aspect, which is destructive, and the soul was bypassed in their case, and the love energy was excluded. But in the case of the aspirant, the power to meditate upon spiritual reality, that's what we're doing, and to contact the soul offsets the dangers inherent in focusing on and using solely the light of matter. So there's a danger in using soul to the light of matter. I remember once when I worked in the arcane school and I was going to a full moon meditation, somehow I would always go out for a walk before these things, and I ran into some guy, and he was on his way to the same thing, and, well, he was just so solidly fifth ray, and his mantra was, "I'm interested in matter. I'm interested only in matter." And he kept on repeating that, and I said, "What have I run into here?" It was interesting. Anyway, these mental magicians, they work within the 18 lower subplanes exclusively. To the lesser light of matter is added the light of the soul, in our case, let us hope, and then these two blended lights of matter and soul, or aspects of the one light, are focused on the mental plane. So matter consists, the light of matter is two lights, mental and the light of matter per se, in the etheric physical plane, and then mental light is also considered material. But there's a greater light, and that's the light of the soul, so we have two blended lights, soul and of matter. They're focused upon the mental plane through the power of the creative imagination, and this means you don't let your imagination just run away with you. You guide it by will and purpose. There are psychological techniques where you just let your imagination roll, and it can be revelatory of what's in your subconscious mind, but we're not talking about that. We're not talking about the imagination just doing its own thing according to its own ancient impulses. We're talking about being directed, its visualizing power being directed by mind and purpose. So this enables man eventually to dissipate glamour and liberates him from the astral plane. And, of course, on our planet, we have a particular struggle. Even our planetary logos, we're told, has not cosmic astrally overcome his own cosmic difficulties, and he's subject to the glamour of what's called personality. Of course, on those high levels, how can we know what that really means? But we live on a planet which has an astral problem, which Venus has overcome. And so Venus is our guide. Cosmic Fire talks a lot about that and how we are struggling to, on our planet, focus ourselves, or our planetary logos is, on the fifth level of the cosmic astral plane, and Venus is already focusing on the sixth. So once that happens, we will be away from the struggles that presently involve all of us, because those struggles involve our planetary logos. So anyway, meditation is our next effort, and when we get the light of the soul involved here, which the strictly mental magician rigorously excludes, then we have a chance of really dissipating the glamour instead of strengthening it. Because after all, the black magicians, they do work with glamour, and they attempt to throw that net of glamour over humanity. And they, they did that long ago. They continue to do that. And when a disciple is making really good progress, they attempt to do that with the individual disciples. So we have to be extremely watchful, because it's a subtle matter and we probably don't sense all that's going on. Now we reach the third stage of focusing the light. We've been doing this, but this amplifies a little more. There's more of a discussion here of what actually happens. The third stage is that in which the light of matter, the light of mind, and the light of the soul, as a channel for the intuition, and that would be buddhi, you know, the greater light. In that light, we shall see light. In the triple light, we shall see buddhi. These three lights are consciously blended by the will, we know what we're doing, fused and focused and, you know, will-empowered in our formula. The man then turns his blended light under soul direction upon the world of glamour, and upon the particular glamour with which he is at any one time preoccupied. I think we should all sit down, you know. I've done this. It's hard to make a real decision. But, you know, look at the glamours that DK talks about around page 121, 122, 120 of Glamour World Problem. And just try to see, what is that particular glamour which at this time somehow preoccupies me, as subtle as it may be. I don't think we should fall into the glamour of having no glamours, you know. I think, until the third degree and even afterwards, there is the possibility of still having wisps of this problem. And probably for the most of us, there is one particular veil, and not necessarily only one, but one which is doing the most damage, and which it would be well for us to know. And it may be along our soul ray line, or, well, probably, I think, or some combination of soul and personality, you know. Anyway, it's good to sit down with that. And, you know, if I were to go over here to, well, here it is. It's page 100 and whatever. Let's see if I have this properly done. No, there it is. Page 120. And just, you know, think about your soul ray and personality ray, because, you know, these glamours are going to come from the soul level as well once the personality appropriates the energy. So, you know, look at them and be honest with yourself. I think I have self-pity here underlined, a basic glamour of this ray, fear, second ray, and so forth. And, you know, try to come up with what may be your particular most troubling glamour, most inhibitory glamour at this point. There it is, you know, those pages in the book or in your CD-ROM from page 120 to 123, and, you know, so you can participate in what he says here. So we turn our blended light under soul direction upon the glamour which is causing the worst difficulty at the moment. The false light of the astral plane disappears in this triple blended light, just like a fire can be nearly put out if subjected to the full rays of the sun. That's very interesting. Maybe more of us are familiar with the next one, or a burning glass, a magnifying glass, focusing the rays of the sun, can start a destructive blaze. But, of course, the sun is the important thing. I often visualize the sun as the symbol of eradicated glamour, of the lifted veils, of the dissipated clouds. So the sun of truth, of righteousness, of power, of reality can shine through. It, for me, it's a very important symbol, and, you know, the ancient prayer of the Gayatri takes us right there. So anyway, the sun, we focus the sun of consciousness upon the glamour, and it puts it out. It dissipates it. Because there are fires raging in the glamorous world. They are fire by friction, largely, but we have some solar fire going here, and it's the solar fire that's going to put out the fire by friction. If we could just get more solarized and learn how to live our life as solar beings using solar fire, that would be a very important objective. Okay, it is the use of a powerful light which can obliterate a lesser light and dissipate a fog. This is a scientific technique. He says we won't get it overnight, but we will get it if we persist. And in times like this, when we wonder what in the world can we do, because there's so much terrible misunderstanding in humanity, so much clash of ideals, so much fanaticism, so much narrow-mindedness, what can we do? Well, we're going to work subjectively, just the way the power of the hierarchy is subjective and extremely potent. We have to learn how to work that way too. And people might say, well, you're not doing anything, you're not doing anything. Well, maybe in the world of outer effects, it doesn't seem like we're doing anything. But in the inner world, and we are working causally to put out the lower fires in favor of the solar fire, which reveals the next stage of reality. All this has to be understandingly and consciously carried forward as preliminary to the technique proper. So here's where he encourages us to just go along. His work will be experimental at first. Okay, we don't exactly know what we're doing, but we'll get better at it. and scientifically applied eventually. Okay, I like that. It will be based upon a recognition of truth, a truth which is faced and accepted. So this is realism. We understand the glamour and its consequences and its effects. And it's not a question of what we want, what we desire. What we desire may be completely against what is true. We have to desire the truth above all things. And as Madame Blavatsky said in the sort of motto of the Theosophical Society, there is no religion higher than truth. And right there, of course, you know, the great producer of many glamours, the religious approach of humanity, truth has to shine out above desire and the religious aspirations. So he's telling us what it's not, but includes all these things in a way. This is not a form of rationalization, you know, of, there's different ways to use that word, but, you know, clear thinking, trying to simply understand things conceptually, though that precedes the definitely scientific work I'm outlining. We do have to be clear about what we're doing and think it through conceptually. It is not the cultivation of fresh interests of a mental and spiritual kind which gradually supersede desire and drive out glamour. Well, those things are necessary too, but it's not just that. You know, like Alice Bailey said, the power of an expulsive new interest and the power of substitution is so important when we want to change. But it's not only that. This is all preparatory in character. They're both apparently necessary. Okay. And leads to an unfoldment which prepares, finally, the aspirant to work scientifically. It is not a process of killing out desire, as some schools of thought teach. You really can't do that. I mean, as Master Moria says, you know, you have to co-measure your desires. Desire is, in a way, what's putting the whole universe back together. It's the great Isis power. It reaches out towards that which is fragmented and divided from you and reunites you with it, if it's high enough desire. So we can't really kill out desire, but we can certainly kill out desire for the fruits of the lower and unreal, unprincipled, cosmically unprincipled world. But it is a process of gradually eradicating desire, and by that he means lower desire, because even the soul has its desire, even the monad has its desires, even the planetary logos and beyond have their desires, but the low desires, which would keep us in the world of form. It is a process of gradually eradicating desire by stern discipline, good old Saturn, Mars together, and hard-trained work. And this, incidentally, involves the dissipation of glamour. So, you know, we're not attracted to these these falsely attractive images which lead nowhere, these will-o'-the-wisps that have been fabricated by us and by others over millions of years and lead nowhere, certainly don't lead to revelation. Such have been the slow techniques of the past. Today the process is to be changed because enough people are now the product of understanding and can work wisely and also scientifically. Well, okay, I think that may be far enough for us to go right now. And next week, I trust I will be here, 28th, I think so. If not, I'll try to figure out I have to go to the United States very soon, so that can possibly interrupt for a short time the process that we're engaged in. But this is the end of doggy number 20 reading. And our date today is 21st of October, 16, and then here we will have the beginning of Dissipation of Glamour, number 21. Beginning of Dissipation of Glamour, number 21, and it's going to be 28th of October. Okay, So, friends, you know how we operate. Now, you may have been working in your glamour work, in your triangles work, in various kinds of subjective work, which these types of work are meant to really make us more powerful on the subtle planes and do our share in correcting humanity's grievous psychological conditioning. You may have thought about a few things, and or there may be something here that is of interest to you. So, you know, what I usually do is try to make this a little smaller so we can have as many of these thoughts under the eye as possible. But I make it awfully small, so it may be just too small, but let's just see. And maybe not too bad, not too bad. And I think we'll be able to get that together. And there we go. All right. So that's what we have discussed today. And let me open the floor up. So either Brett will let me know if there's a question, or if I don't see the question, or if there's a statement, or if there's something you wish to say or comment upon, what comes to mind, what would you like to discuss in this discussion phase of our work together. So floor is open to any of you if you wish to proceed, and I'll do my best to, I certainly don't have all the answers, but at least try to shed a little bit of added light on the matter. So looking for you, looking for your thoughts, looking for your responses, anything that may be of interest to you, either in today's work or the work we have done, or in your thoughts on the subject. I know we're just proceeding a little bit at a time, you know. We could, like, try to read whole swaths of material. But this is something where we have to absorb things deeply. They have to mean something to us. We have to recognize these energies as real. The light of the soul, real. The light in the head, real. The mentality, the light of mentality, real. The light of vitality, real. All these things have to be of increasing reality to us. Okay, Michael. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, I like this wonderful historical background so that we learn how things have been, and then this last sentence, today the process is to be changed. Because we don't know what we need to know where we came from so that we can better understand where we're going.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What's that old saying? Basically misquoted, but those who are ignorant of history are doomed to repeat it.
Right.
And he's given us, the interesting thing is what Blavatsky gave was pretty much the historical approach to the threefold outpouring. Now, Bailey came along with the psychological approach, which was the Ray 2 approach, and of which, interestingly enough, the secret the treatise on cosmic fire is considered the main piece, a psychological treatise, psychological key to the secret doctrine. What will the next one be? You know, probably very practical, probably full of willpower. It's hard to predict, but I figure the first Ray will play a big role in it. So just the way a human being, if he knows his own history and how he's developed and so forth, can have a lot better opportunity to clarify the present situation, so it is with humanity. And actually, in the earlier parts of the book, he does kind of deal with where we've been. He does give quite a bit on the history of humanity and the earlier types of civilizations, etc. So keeping the historical perspective, I think you're suggesting, I think it's a very wise thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So good. Thank you for bringing that up. We, as we move on into the second ray perspective, we cannot forget the Lord of Memory, who is on the third ray. That's one of the things that the third ray Lord is called, the Lord of Memory. And when the Buddha came along, he was a third ray monad, according to the Tibetan anyway. Among his eightfold path, we do have right memory as being very important. You know, you can't base your present conclusions on a shaky understanding of the past, otherwise the present conclusions are never correct. And people with false memories, you know, they don't decide wisely in the present. So let's keep sharp about memory if we possibly can.
Okay, a strong foundation, yeah, a strong foundation for the structure to be built.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, and that's part of realism too, isn't it? You know, it's very interesting how, you know, you're in a court, a court of law. Why is it that a stenographer is so busy there, you know, typing everything out, typing every word? You know, they have their own, we have a friend who's a court stenographer. They have the special type of typewriters and so forth. They just get everything down. Of course, now there's also the tape recorder. It's just so we have a basis, a true basis of what actually happened in the past to base our present conclusions upon. And, you know, we have to be accurate about these matters under the Lord of Memory. You know, just a little aside, if you go into Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1, you're going to find in the 60s there, you know, maybe the 60s and 70s, you'll find the names of the Ray Lords. And he says, excuse me, he says basically the only value of knowing these names of the Ray Lords is to discover within yourself the same quality so that you can identify your own Ray formula according to its similarity with the great names which are given. So that, you know, some of you who are interested in your rays, I guess we all are, just go to Esoteric Psychology, volume one, and you will see things that will really help you with your determination of the rays. Here, look at here's the second ray. You know, you feel related to this, the displayer of glory, the Lord of eternal love, the cosmic magnet, the giver of wisdom, et cetera, et cetera, the son of the cosmic Christ, or, you know, more like the third ray, the keeper of the records, the Lord of memory, the unifier of the builder of the foundation, see? So anyway, all that is here, and I recommend it to you strongly. You know, you've been studying your rays maybe a long time, but every once in a while, go back to the names of the Ray Lords, because they have a wonderful way of essentializing these ray qualities. Okay. Thanks, Michael. Okay, friends, other thoughts, questions, comments? Anything there? You know, be brave. You know, we're all in this together, and none of us knows everything. We're just trying to We're feeling our way along, and eventually we'll see our way clearly, and we'll really be able to contribute something subjectively to the clarification of consciousness. Okay, it looks like, oops, I saw a hand up there for a second. Was that you, Debo? I don't know. Whoever wants to speak, just put up your hand, and or a question mark, ask a question, write a question, or write a statement, and that will be fine. Or if any of the staff wishes to speak, you know, I think Olivia can't be here tonight, neither can Tuya. They both are instrumental in starting this thing with me. And it's just one of the efforts, among many, for those people who are interested in the dissipation of glamour. You know, when you have a popular magazine called Glamour, goodness, seems like a desirable thing. And yet Alice Bailey and DK said, we both have a horror of glamour, apparently seeing the terrible things to which it can lead. Okay? Questions? Thoughts? Of course, is tonight the night of being shy or something like that, you know. Basically, you know, look, how it is. We all are a soul. on a certain level, we manifest soul light. In our present state of submersion, an aspect of our consciousness is immersed in the 18 lower subplanes. And we have to pull that soul light imaginatively into the mind, which we can direct with the will. We also have to gather up this great power of matter and fortify the mental light with it. And then, through the power of our creative imagination, the three lights are brought together. It's really in a rather magical area within the brain. It's sort of the blending of the soul light, the etheric brain, and the actual dense physical brain. Sort of there in the center of the head around the pineal gland, this beam of light is generated. It is will-empowered as we call upon whatever contact we have with our sacrifice petals, with the jewel and the lotus, with the slowly organizing atmic vehicle. And we send forth this will-empowered beam into the imagined astral plane. We use mantras, we use explanations, whatever we want to use. You know, I oftentimes mentally use certain mantras to try to dissipate and see the conditions I want to see. So, it, you know, the process is clear. We just have to get good at it and get better at it. Hey, Stephen, is that
yes.
you? Is that you?
Okay. We have two written questions.
Okay, thank you, Brett. So anyway, so we have Jan and we have Stephen. Okay, so Jan first here. I'm interested in learning more of the emotional involvement in glamour recognition. Yeah, because it's so tricky. Some glamours don't seem so destructive. The glamour of the love of being loved. Well, what will we sacrifice for popularity? Just have to look at politics and you'll see that. Anyway, many, many soul values are sacrificed to glamorous desires or the desire for unrealities. So it doesn't seem so destructive. You say, okay, well, the glamour of the love of being loved or the glamour to be loved being one of them, so they may be easily overlooked until one looks deeper, yeah, into the emotional response created by a certain glamour, the demand to be loved in this case, and the sacrificing of much that is difficult and true and needs to be upheld in order to continue to be loved. And right in one's own family, this is often really worked out in a quite strenuous way. This complicates the recognition of our affective, you know, that's a word that is used, affect in relation to emotions, affective glamours. It seems, speaking of hate, etc., can you comment on the two presidential candidates and the concrete things we're seeing that indicate where each is most likely more closely aligned, light or dark? It seems that we as disciples are to use our intuition, etc., as accurately as possible to help make decisions for the planet. Okay. Oh, is this, goodness, have I, oh, maybe I ran over. I might have, did I run over into like one thing? Jan Oliveira was
yes.
writing here, and then I went over into Stephanie's thing.
Right.
Oh, goodness. Well, where did Jan stop? Oh, after the word it seems.
It seems, yes.
Okay. I have a friend, Stephanie, called Stephen Renneberg. He's in Australia. And so he often would write Steph and R. So I couldn't tell. But okay, Stephanie, you're not Stephen. All right, got it. Yes, well, okay. Anything that veils reality can have its consequences when we come to directing our life forward. If we desire that which is unreal, even though it seems relatively harmless, like a wave of self-pity or whatever, DK talks about major and minor glamours. That's coming up in our discussion here. But anything that veils reality and that we begin to desire, we desire the veiled form of it, it's going to mislead us. And it just depends how intensely we adhere to it and how long it takes for us to realize that we have been misled by our own false desires or desires for things that have no soul value. It's so important to be able to separate ourselves from our intense emotions, from our desires, when we come to evaluate glamour. We almost have to be very fifth ray about it, stand back in the mind and see as clearly as possible, regardless of what we like or dislike, the consequences of what we desire, regardless of what we like or dislike. So, if we, it's interesting because he tells us that in order to do effective work on glamour, many people who are emotionally polarized but somewhat mentally focused are needed. Meaning they're used to this kind of living in the world of attraction and repulsion, the world of desire, the world of emotion. They have rather strong astral bodies, but they do have a good focused mind. That's why he chose so many people that had a strong sixth ray, which is correlated, as you know, with the sixth vehicle, the sixth principle, which is a kama, or the sixth vehicle, the astral vehicle. So we need that kind of equipment, but we also need this mental observation. And it was interesting that in the glamour group, there wasn't a whole lot of fifth ray. But he put in there a man who had a first-ray soul, a fifth-ray personality, and a fifth-ray mind. He did have a sixth-ray astral body, okay, and a seventh-ray physical body, but it was his fifth-ray. He said, DK said, this is going to give you balancing. I'm going to bring balance to the group. And fifth-ray is a balancing ray, and it's so interesting. DK oftentimes talks about our need for the fifth ray. When you go into Letters on Occult Meditation, he talks about how the causal body, egoic lotus, sounds its note before incarnation. And, excuse me, sees what it has, sees what it doesn't have. And in the example he used, the person was quite a good mystic and had all of this sensitive response, but not enough fifth ray. So therefore, a fifth ray personality was chosen for the next incarnation. Now, technically, how that's done, I don't know, but the solar angel has great alchemical abilities and can choose that kind of process and direct it. So whatever our emotions are, however intense they are, however tricky it is, however much we're attracted or repulsed, we really just have to learn how to drop that for a while, stand back and see. Now, feeling is associated with the astral body and seeing with the mental body. And it's this power of sight which is needed independent of what we want, which is going to lead us out of this quagmire. All right, that's my response to your thought there, Jan, and it's tricky. Yes, it's tricky, but let's learn to stand back. Okay, now this was Stephanie's thing about the election, and I just began to realize I was kind of reading along, continuing. We do have we have to understand that the United States has a Gemini personality and the idea of the opposition between the pairs of opposites between soul and personality is a very likely condition, especially as Gemini is ruling the personality ray. The Aquarian soul, I think Obama tried to, with his Aquarius rising sign, I think it's that, tried to exemplify that quite a bit. I can't tell yet how this is going to work out. But it definitely seems that in the division between the red and the blue, Jupiter is the blue and Mars is the red. Mars is the sixth ray conservative orientation. It never gets into the world of the soul, really, and it rules the entire personality, and it's a non-sacred planet. Blue is the blue of Bodhi, it's the blue of Jupiter, it's even the blue indigo of Venus on a very high level. And in this case, in my view, for whatever scorpionic flaws of the tendency to conceal that Hillary may have, I think she's much more along this line. she's tough. Scorpio's tough, and she has a lot there that is steely. And I think she represents much more the inclusive approach. The danger always with the second-rate type in Jupiter is over-inclusiveness, an unwise over-premature inclusiveness before the elements that are brought together have the power to wisely work out their relationships. So some degree of restraint, I think, will be needed. I think we've seen this problem of inclusiveness in the European Union. It's the whole issue of vetting. And vetting seems like a harsh process, but you do have to be very careful what you mix with what. So human beings are energy units and of all different kinds, and we have to mix them properly or there will be constant friction and explosions. So we cannot go too far in that direction either. But, you know, my view is clear. The blue represents the soul and the future of the United States and the future of humanity under Aquarius. The red represents the reactionary responses, personal, emotional body, glamour, and all those things that we're trying to rid ourselves of. It's good to have a wise conservatism, because what it basically means is you conserve soul values. As long as the conservatism does not turn personal and reactionary. There's a big difference between conservatism and a reactionary attitude. Okay. So, oftentimes we find ourselves having these characteristics in more than one ray lord. How do we go from there? Well, just, do your best to ascertain what your ray chart really is. And then look at the tendencies that are exemplified by the names of the ray lords on any one of the rays that you have in your ray chart. Now, of course, the soul ray qualities are the most important, and eventually all the other rays have to become sub-rays of your soul ray, at least for the time being, until the monadic quality steps in. I might recommend that Rick Good and I and Kathy Manker, the statistician, have been working very hard to produce personal identity profile PIP number 3. It's almost ready, and I would recommend that you get in touch with Rick Good, and he can arrange for you to take the PIP 3 as soon as we have it ready. And that may help you understand your ray chart a little better. Maybe you already have a very good idea of what it is, but maybe it can be useful to you. And then according to the ray chart, see how those rays in your nature resonate to the ray lord names, or use the ray lord names to help you determine aspects of your ray chart. Okay. All right. Let's see what else here. This looks like Jan again. Would we choose to use a glamour that veils reality because it is more comfortable to us in our emotional state? Well, every glamour is going to veil reality as far as I can see. Every glamour. That's the nature of the coloration of glamour, the veil and the distortion. I asked the previous because I see spiritual students who seem to promote that Donald Trump is the best candidate of the two because he is promoting so much change from the status quo. Well, you know, in Germany in 1933, when the fascist Nazi party came into legitimate control through voting, it was a big change. And change in itself has no value. It's just a question of whether it's really changed for the better. So there are certain glamours at the present time which are the most difficult, and they have a lot to do with hatred in the world and division, separation, separativeness, and so forth. That's the great heresy, the heresy of separativeness. That's the one we have to deal with in all the glamours that are resultant from it. Right now we have a world that is filled with so much hate, hatred. And DK has said, well, you know, Second World War was a little better than the First World War because there was less hatred. But he also said that no group produces more hatred than the religious ideologies, and we have on the doorstep of a religious war. So we have to be very careful about the glamour of hatred and its illusory origin, the heresy of separativeness, and that's why we're working in that way. Okay, now here is Debo asking something. The light of the soul saves and directs. Yes, it does. The attraction or pull to bypass the light of the soul is a great danger. Yes, when we just use Ray 1 and Ray 3. Just will and intelligence. That's basically what the Nazis, and that's basically what Hitler's group did. They hit Shambhala via the third aspect, and they bypassed the soul, the light of the soul. Okay. It's a great danger. Meditation is said to lead the way. Sure, and our meditation largely is directed at first towards soul contact, soul infusion, and the great principle of love, wisdom, entering into the third aspect of divinity, which is our personality. So we're not meditating on the monad yet, not primarily. We're meditating on the Christ principle within us, the presence of the great soul or angel as the angel of the presence. And we're meditating on the love of the solar angels. It's a group of solar angels, really, and how they supervise our development and how they embody the great Venus power, which is not only light, but deeply is love. So if we meditate upon the soul, making soul contact, expressing the Christ principle, expressing goodness, unity, inclusiveness, compassion, empathy, you know, these great virtues that come from the higher mental plane and beyond, then we are safe from this bypassing of the soul through pure will in its third aspect, which is very destructive. Like Master DK said, look, the death of a Master Jesus or of a Father Damien, you know, the man who went to help the lepers in Molokai Island back in the 19th century, that kind of death is very different from the death of a Hitler. And different aspects of the will were involved, different aspects of Shambhala. Shambhala has eternal love eternal, light supernal, peaceful, silent will. But at first, our tendency is to contact it through a kind of distortion of our own personal will. And that's what happened with these seven men who were the occult leaders representing the Black Lodge at that time. So yes, if we just stay with occult meditation as Master DK has presented it, we're going to be much better off. And last thing, speaking of hate, can you comment on the two presidential candidates and concrete things were said. Maybe some of you here in Finland, we woke up at 3:45 in the morning to see the debate live. It was an amazing, amazing show. And I hope that if you haven't seen the debate, you've been able to at least see sections of it so you get the idea. That indicate where each most likely and most closely aligned light or darkness. Well, like one of our astute students said, you know, no one's entirely good or evil. And it's not that, you know, either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton is entirely good or evil, or that Donald Trump, because he, you know, he's not trained, he says outrageous things, and his Leo rising sign is getting the better of him and all that. It's not that he's an evil man or anything like that, but personal, he's a personal man. Personal, very reactive, personal. And I think the principles, the larger inclusive principles, are with Hillary. Of course, as a Scorpio, she's a Scorpio. You know, I'm sure she can generate a lot of that resistant energy and can dislike someone quite well. There was the Alfred E. Smith dinner a couple of days ago or a day ago, I don't know. It's supposed to be a rather jovial time where the presidential candidates get together and offer some jokes, even jokes about themselves, with a little self-deprecation. But it didn't go off so well because they had a certain animosity towards each other, although Hillary was far more self-deprecating than Donald Trump. He couldn't quite manage to poke fun at himself. Anyway, it's been a big psychological revelation as we've watched this election unfold, and I think at the moment it's going in the right direction, at least from my perspective. Okay, friends, let's see. I think we've got to get on. Oh, my goodness, we do have to get on. What else is there, Brett? Is there anything else?
That's all.
That's it. Yeah, we do have to meditate now. Okay, well, you know, I think what you do understand from this glamour work we're doing is that we talk about a lot of things. We talk about glamour, but we also talk about occultism in general. So a lot of associations will come in, and we stick to our subject, of course, but we widen the subject so that the factors existing in occultism which bear upon the work we're studying are also brought into play. And I think that's the way it can be and should be. All right. Now, we'll go on. And thank you for your thoughts, for your questions, and your comments. And now we go on doing our work. I'm sorry. For the dissipation of world glamour, and we're focusing on the two glamours, or one glamour and its cause, which is an illusion, the great heresy of separateness. So, we'll begin in silence together, not the full 10 minutes perhaps, but attuning as a group to the soul, and although we cannot really name the group members, if you want to go down through the list, I think you can see who are the group members. But we have a larger group here than the usual group of 9 doing this kind of work. So 10 minutes of, or at least some minutes, of soul silence. So in the silence, we get the sense of our soul work together, and the fact that we are, wherever we are geographically and temporally, we are in each other's presence. And now, since this is work that is serious, and any one of us can be overcome by glamour at any time, we say together the protective formula. As a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point I never move. I will do this again, and we'll offer the cross of divinity, as DK calls it, as we give these words. As a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light, and from that point, I never move. And with this protective formula now enunciated by the group, we will go through the three preparatory stages. First, we focus the dual light of matter and mind, lights within the personality. And we focus them within the mental body. And then we meditate on soul contact, and we seek to recognize soul light. And finally, we fuse in the mental body the two lesser lights of mind and matter with soul light. We use the creative imagination to do this. And the three lights are imaginatively fused. And then we say together, the light is one, and in that light we shall see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. Now we move into the formula proper. And as we're saying these words of power, we visualize the great searchlight that we individually, and especially we as a group, have created. As we turn this light upon the astral plane, imaginatively considered. Radiance are we and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth. The inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light we work and turn the darkness into day. And we ponder on what we have just said. We want now to invoke the spiritual will. We're going to strengthen our light, our group beam, with the invocation of spiritual will, coming ultimately from the monad, but especially from the atmic level, and through the jewel and the lotus, and through the sacrifice synthesis petal, and through all the sacrifice petals, we summon together the impersonal spiritual will, the purpose of which is to enact the divine plan, and no personal desires of ours at all. Ultimately, the spiritual will is as much of the will of Sanat Kumara as we as a group can absorb. And so we affirm the power of the spiritual will with the next mantra, and we see it happen. With power upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. And we visualize that light extended into the astral plane, three as one, and empowered by the spiritual will, which drives the divine plan forward. And now we're going to name the glamour and utter three words of power as we throw the destructive, weakening, dissipating beam upon it as it penetrates the glamour. The power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of hatred and separativeness. The power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life behind the glamour. And we will continue for 5 minutes in silence, visualizing our beam penetrating the glamour, producing its weakening and its dissipation. An intense process in the silence, according to the three words of power. And so the clouds are dispersed. The life goes out of these glamours. And the great sun of love, wisdom, inclusiveness, unity shines in the consciousness of humanity. And so as a group, we withdraw our beam, refocus ourselves upon the mental plane, and the extensive power of the light is turned off. It'll get stronger and have more ability, more effectiveness as we go on and on. And each of us then will sound the om 3 times. Indicating the 3 aspects of the personality through which the light can be effective, but especially the astral plane. So, friends, we will persist in this work. Tomorrow, we're doing the evening sessions now. We'll have more readings in the Destiny of the Nations, and we're working on the difference between the 6th and 7th ray and how these different ray approaches condition the changes of our civilization. And then on Sunday evening, we'll be doing the attracting money for hierarchical purposes. I want to thank you very much for attending this work. It is work, and we must continue to work on our individual veiling process, our individual distortions and so forth. If we can see them, have some understanding of them, and then dissipate them using the scientific technique that we have been given. Okay, we'll see you tomorrow night, those of you who can attend the work on the Soul of Nations, which for the moment is to discuss certain parts of the Destiny of the Nations, and then later to return to the invocation of the soul of various individual nations, of which we've done about 100 so far. Take care, and this will be up on Makara website soon. Direct your friends toward it. If they'd like to participate in this type of work, they can hear it and they can meditate with us as we go along. Appreciating your presence, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.